Blackboard talk is because this is one of those topics that it's better to understand what the problems are than what the solutions are. So I'm going to try to give you a sense of what's hard about predicting standard model backgrounds. But first, let me tell you who we are. So this program that I'll be talking about, this thing Geneva, which stands for Generate Events Analytically, has been a collaboration with Christian Bauer and Frank Tackman. And we put out some papers in January about some of the physics issues in event generation, and also some of the technical aspects of it. And I've given various talks about this, given Blackboard talks, and at the end of the day, people say, well, okay, you've done all this great stuff, but what are you really doing? What is this fundamental problem from a theory point of view? What is hard about predicting background? Now, I think there's a sense with the LHC coming that, well, what does it even matter for backgrounds? Aren't we just going to measure these anyway? And in certain cases, this is true. We don't really need theory input from backgrounds because there are various control samples that we can use to understand what these backgrounds are. So there's a couple examples just to emphasize. For example, entirely self-calibrated measurements that you could make at the LHC. Imagine you had some measurement that under the standard model would be exactly invariant under some symmetry that would take a measurement that gave you one measurement that gave you minus one, and they'd be exactly the same height in the standard model. And so if you did a measurement for which you saw an excess of 1 over 0.1, then you wouldn't need anyone to estimate the size of the background for you. You would see a signal, and even if the, you know, if the background is here and the signal were this versus this, you wouldn't really care about what the background size was. You would say, well, the background gives me equal amounts. I see an excess, therefore I see something new. That actually predicting the size of this background, the zeroth order is not as relevant a thing. It's a self-calibrated kind of calculation. And a similar kind of more or less self-calibrating thing is if you can sideband it. So if you have some measurement where the standard model background looks like this, but you're really confident that this region is a control region and this region is a control region and that your signal lies in here. Again, you don't really need someone to tell you the size of the background. You simply go in your control region, measure the background here, go in the control region, measure the background here. And while there is some subtlety as to how exactly you extrapolate from here to here, again, theory input on the background isn't that important because you already have control regions that define essentially what the signal could possibly look like or what your sensitivity to that signal could be. Another example are cross-correlated measurements, measurements where you're looking at two parameters, say x and y, and you're really convinced that the signal lives only in this region of x and y and that this is a control region. This is a control region. This is a double control. If x and y are completely uncorrelated, though, then you can measure the background in this control region, measure the background in this control region, and if they're really uncorrelated, then you can cross-correlate these things to predict exactly what the background should be in the signal region. And again, you don't need theory. So these are three cases where someone's saying, oh, we have a new, better way of estimating the standard model background, completely irrelevant because the method, the experimented method of finding the signal already controls what the background would be.
Can you think, is there any example of
this?
Yeah.
Jason Kumar came to Berkeley and gave a talk about looking for anomalous triple point gauge boson couplings.
Oh.
And that's a case where a CP violation, and so you have a measurement where you could argue about what is the size of the signal, but it does not matter whatsoever. You know, the root n statistics is such that if you're going to see it, well, you have to see it with root n, and whether that n is n of signal or n of signal plus background, it's the same thing. You need root n in order to see that. And so that observation is completely independent of the size of the background. So again, these are cases where the normalization of the background or even the shape of the background is not important. The problem that you get into is when you think about things that are only semi-calibrated. Semi-calibrated measurements, or as if you have an observable, where you're only confident that the low end is a control region. And so you have some control region, you have some background, but that your signal kind of extends to very large values. And in that case, if you're trying to look, so this is kind of simultaneously a signal region, But if you want to anchor the background, well, you have to simultaneously think about this as signal and control at the same time. And in this case, if you can't anchor the background at some other point, then you really require some theory estimate to do the extrapolation to large, you know, whatever this observable is, large value of this observable. Now, what a lot of people say is, well, come on, you know, we'll measure this background in other channels, blah, blah, blah. That's all equivalent to this, all equivalent to doing cross-correlation, that you say, this x, maybe I know my signal is going to extend to large values of x, but I have some other observable that's going to control it. This is the case when you talk about, for example, in supersymmetry, the background of, background of z going to neutrinos plus jets. You say, well, z going to neutrinos, sorry. My background lives, sorry, z going to,
do I draw this?
Well, okay, I'm getting confused. Z going to neutrino plus jets, and you compare that, you have another control of z going to e plus e minus plus jets. So this is a jets plus missing energy background to supersymmetry. Well, this is a way of cross-correlating that background by finding another channel that, that, in principle, these things should be exactly correlated in such a way that you can figure out what the background should be in that region. So this is a case where yes, the z plus jets background has a large tail, a large missing energy, but you can control that tail by finding another channel that will give you a control, and that's essentially this cross-correlated type of measurement. Well, what I'm interested in is this case. What do you do if there's no other variable that's uncorrelated with it? What do you do? How do you get the best theory estimate in a case where fundamentally you don't know what the background looks like and there's no other way of trying to control the background? In that case, you really do need to do an extrapolation. There is no other, again, you want to look for another channel in order to anchor the background, but let's say you don't have it. In this case, Monte Carlo is absolutely necessary. So for these semi-calibrated backgrounds, what's clear is that we don't really care about the overall normalization. The overall rate we can adjust in this correlated region here, this control region here. What we care about is the shape. What is the shape of the background?
I mean, even for the sideband case, I mean, it's like you drew it there. You don't, you know, all you need is a plotting program. But if you have to rely on signal over root background,
yeah,
you really want to know that you're.
You would want to, but it's not a. You'd want to, but it's not a deal breaker. Mm-hmm. Yes, you would love to have a measurement of the background for this one, but it's not a deal breaker if you don't have it. If you believe that you have good enough controls, obviously, if something's really falling like this, then the statistics in this outer control region is such that you'd be nervous about exactly how you drew the line, and you'd love to have a theory extrapolation for this, but it's not as crucial as in this case where there is nothing else to anchor it. But you're right, it's the same kind of thing. You would like to have a theory estimate for what the background shape looks like in that signal region. So let's calculate a background. Let's calculate the shape of a background. And immediately this gets extremely confusing. How do you calculate the shape of a background? So for this entire talk, I'll just be talking about E plus E minus going to jets, but this is sufficiently confusing that it has all the problems that you get in PP collisions. And so let's try to calculate the background. So let's calculate the tree level total cross section. Okay, the tree level total cross section is E plus E minus going to QQ bar. And this is something that is order alpha s to the 0. Great, we calculate the tree level total cross section. But I've told you already that normalization doesn't matter. So I calculate this tree level total cross section, but for the purposes of background estimation, I need some more differential information. This just gives me the total rate. I want some sort of differential information. So I want some differential cross section. In the case of a differential cross-section, well, what could you do? And here I'm imagining there is differential information in here. There's differential information here coming from, you know, the E plus and minus coming in and the quarks coming out. There is information, of course, in the angle here. Let me integrate over that. So I really want differential information in some other structure. And in particular, differential information that could come from thinking about a Q bar, and a gluon. So this is differential information that would kind of tell me a little bit about what is the shape of this jet, how fat is this jet coming off. This would be the first tree-level correction to this total cross-section. And this is something that's order alpha s to the 1 of this process. So this is what I would call, this is the what I would say is the normalization of a background. And this is the first information about the shape of a background. And immediately things are extremely confusing because the total cross-section at tree level is not equal to the cross-section at tree level for the 2-to-2 process plus the integral over this 2-to-3 diagram here. There's a mismatch in this. So whereas you have the total rate here calculated at tree level and some differential rate calculated at tree level, you just don't take this and add this to get the total tree level rate. In fact, well, this doesn't make sense. We know why it doesn't make sense. We know it doesn't make sense because in this process, what is true is that we have to take the total rate is equal to the 2-jet tree level plus the 2-jet virtual diagram plus the 3-jet tree level. This is the correct, sorry, this is the total cross-section to order alpha s to the 1. And in fact, not only does this not equal, this thing is infinite because we know that infrared divergences cancel between this piece and this piece, and that we need to include this diagram in order to calculate the total rate. So in order to get the shape compared to the total rate, in order to mod out the normalization, we would have had to include this virtual diagram. This means that you can't predict the shape really at just tree level. It doesn't make sense to talk about the tree level differential distribution. The only thing that really makes formal sense is to talk about the differential shape at a given order in perturbation theory. Okay, so let's say we did this. Let's say we calculated this diagram. We say the total rate is this. It's the tree level, the virtual, and the tree, but I still want this differential information. Well, I'm still confused. I'm still confused because there's an IR divergence canceling between a 2-jet rate and a 3-jet rate. This 3-jet is giving me the differential. This thing by itself still doesn't make sense on its own. This object, which is telling me how big this jet is going, this is equivalent to measuring some non-trivial distribution. What we have is we have a situation where the 2-jet rate is giving me a delta function in some distribution, and the 3-jet rate is giving me some additional shape. It doesn't make sense to just get rid of this region here in order to talk about the total rate for a process, because the total rate for the process is IR divergences canceling between a 2-body phase space and a 3-body phase space. So 2-body phase space, 3-body phase space. They cancel, but this is supposed to have the differential rate. There's a cancellation between things that involve fundamentally different multiplicities in the number of partons. So what are we going to do about this? How are we going to predict what a background looks like given the fact that there's some ambiguity about connecting the differential rate to the total rate? What people normally do in next to leading order calculations is they introduce the idea of a measurement. So normally, when people think about analog calculations, they introduce some measurement M. And M is some procedure that satisfies the following conditions. That M, taking a measurement on a 3-body phase space object, and taking a measurement on a 2-body configuration, that the measurement acting on this and the measurement acting on this, that this thing asymptotes, this thing asymptotes to this in the limit that this gluon, or this, the angle of the gluon relative to the quark, either becomes soft or collinear. So this thing asymptotes to this in the soft collinear limit. So what this means is that the kind of total cross-section, differential total cross-section of some measurement M is the two-body tree level differential cross-section with respect to M, plus the two-body virtual with respect to M, plus the integral over the three-body tree with respect to M. And because this measurement operator respects the soft and collinear divergences of QCD, because this asymptotes to this, the same cancellation that allowed for the IR divergences to cancel between this virtual diagram and this tree diagram still persists here. So the IR divergences are canceled between this. And so for a given infrared safe measurement M, I can always define what that observable M is in terms of the calculations that I do. But this requires a definition of an observable. So if I define an observable and I do a calculation, then I can get a fully differential information about that observable that makes perfect sense. So if I define the observable ahead of time, I know what calculation I need to do. And this is great, except for this is not what experiments want to do. This is, requires a definition of an observable ahead of time. This is not what Atlas and CMS want. What they want is they want a theory calculation more of this form where they can apply any measurement to it and get a sensible result. That is, they know that they need to make sure that their experimental measurement respects the soft and collinear divergences of QCD. They know that their experimental measurement has to have this property. But they want to define any such observable. They don't want to have to tell us all the observables they're ever going to do over the lifetime of the machine for us to make predictions for it. They want to have, in some sense, fully differential information. They want to define their observables in terms of, in some sense, the two-body phase space they see, the three-body phase space they see. They want us to give a generic prediction that then they can fold up together and compare to their data. So, of course, the two-body phase space and the three-body phase space here don't make any sense with respect to what's observed. This is talking about things in terms of a parton language. And, of course, experimentally, we talk about everything in terms of hadrons. And so step one, or zero, really, I should say, of giving Atlas and CMS exactly what they want, step zero that you would do is you would say, you're going to make an assumption that is actually not true, but you make an assumption that there is some mapping from partons to hadrons that makes sense. So from a theorist, we calculate E plus E minus going to partons. We calculate this perturbatively, and then we have this parton to hadron matching of which we use some model of non-perturbative QCD. And the assumption is that such a model exists and such a model makes sense. That's a zeroth assumption. We can only do perturbative calculations of partons. What experimentals see in their detectors are hadrons. The only way we know how to do it is to say E plus E minus going to partons, then partons going to hadrons. This picture, of course, is completely wrong. This violates quantum mechanics. We know that the only thing that really makes sense is E plus E minus going to hadrons, and we're kind of splitting this thing up arbitrarily. And, well, it's not that you cannot describe this process in terms of a probabilistic going from E plus E minus to partons and a probabilistic partons to hadrons. You can only define it as a probabilistic E plus E minus all the way to hadrons. But we make this assumption. We justify this assumption by appealing to various factorization proofs.
I mean, in a way, if you know if you define an infrared safe observable and calculate it, you at least part in some sense you get around this, right? Because the infrared safety is precisely telling you that it doesn't matter how you match the partons like to hadrons.
Well, assuming that the same that the measurement acting on partons and the measurement acting on hadrons is the same thing, which is not completely obvious. So saying the energy distribution on partons is the same as the energy distribution on hadrons. This assumes that whatever's coming out, that whatever I talk about, the stress energy tensor coming out from this, and then all the way to infinity where I see hadrons are the same. That need not be the case. That is also part of the assumption in factorization. You assume that this energy flow from here to here is going to be the same as the energy flow from here to here, such that if you get the IR divergence structure correct from here to here, it will mimic over here. But that's not obvious, and that's part of the assumptions going into these factorization proofs.
Well, I agree with that. That's true. I mean, but that is in a way sort of old hat. I think
right.
that you're
it's
going to
hat.
Have to. You have it a little bit worse because you're trying to make sense out of, well, what we'll see exactly,
yeah.
but you're going to try to make sense out of fully differential
here.
Distributions for partons.
Yes.
So you have it worse because.
I have it worse.
Yeah.
So in this case, the zeroth assumption is that this picture holds and I can't change anything about that. I'm going to, again, assume this same thing here. I'm going to assume that to understand E plus E minus to hadrons, it's sufficient to understand E plus E minus to partons, but as Marcus just said. You still have the problem. You still have the problem that the only way I know how to understand E plus E minus the partons is in terms of a measurement function. So that just having this parton to hadron matching doesn't help me with this problem of how do I simultaneously talk about things that where the infrared divergences are being defined under different dimensionalities of phase space.
Maybe a way you could say this is that with this assumption made that
yeah.
the point of an infrared safe observable is that it doesn't matter, the model isn't going to matter how you go from partons to hadrons. So you could say that you're looking for a partonic representation of all these, of sort of all of these infrared safe things simultaneously.
I want a partonic representation.
It doesn't have to have any quantum mechanical reality to
yes.
it, but it has to reproduce all the IR safe. All the possible IR safe.
All the possible IR safe things. So I want to have, exactly right, a representation of E plus E minus to partons that is valid for any IR safe observable. And that can be used to construct any IR safe observable. Okay. So we want. We would want fully differential. Fully differential QCD predictions. And we see that this is impossible because, again, two-body phase space, being fully differential in two-body phase space, or being fully differential in three-body phase space, fully differential in four-body phase space, these by themselves don't make sense because we know that, for example, tree-level diagrams here cancel infrared divergences of virtual diagrams here. In fact, we know that tree-level divergences here cancel virtual divergences here, which cancel, two-loop things here. And that, what does it mean to have fully differential QCD predictions? How can I possibly give you something that has fully differential information if, to give you a three-body phase-space distribution, I'd have to know, in some sense, what the two-body was. To give you a four-body phase-space distribution, I'd have to tell you the three and the two were.
Okay.
So let's talk about something that does make sense. Something that does make sense is regulated phase space. The divergences in QCD that make it impossible to define fully differential in any of these things, they're of a form. They're not just random divergences places. The ones that are physical are really infrared and collinear, soft and collinear. Divergences. And so there is something that does make sense. Something that does make sense is regulated three-body phase space. Regulated three-body phase space would be three-body phase space subject to the condition that any two partons are farther apart than some scale mu. If I were to regulate my three-body phase space in such a way that I never visit the regions with soft collinear divergences, then I would get something that would make sense. But I still want to get the same answers. That is, I still want it to be that the integral over this phase space and the integral over two body phase space would give me at the end of the day the total cross-section. So if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to say that three body phase space is going to be regulated, then that regulated region has to move into two body phase space. So the picture you should have in your mind is that two-body phase space, or three-body phase space, is this. So regulated three-body phase space, because we have three, two to three coming out, where we force these things to be widely separated. This is three-body phase space. Two-body phase space is ordinary two-body phase space plus the integral over three-body phase space where these two guys are close. If I do this, if I do a calculation where I integrate over regulated three-body and regulated two-body, that is, two-body regulated plus integral of three-body regulated is the same thing as two-body regulated plus integral, or sorry, let me put this. With this definition, two-body regulated phase space plus the integral of three-body regulated phase space is the same as two-body phase space plus the integral of three-body phase space.
So in this case, I was the question that occurred to me, I think I know how to answer it in this case, is how do you know what to integrate over?
How do I know what to integrate over here? And this is somehow defined by the scale mu.
So, I mean, my guess is that in this case, where it's E plus E minus goes to QQ bar, it's just gluons, right?
Right. In general, it's
you have to... In general, you have to think about it, right?
You have to think very carefully about what you're going to integrate over.
Yeah.
And in fact, what we'll do is that we'll integrate over... I'm not integrating over gluons. I'm integrating over the combination of quark and gluon.
You're turning that double thing into one parton.
I'm turning that double thing into one parton, so I have this quark and this gluon, and I'm turning it into, because of flavor and color, I'm turning this into a quark, but this quark is not the same as that quark. That is, when I integrate over this object, when I define the angle theta, so if this thing defines an angle theta...
Is there an important difference between... I mean, you're integrating over the. It's not. It's really incorrect to say that you could. I could think of it as just integrating out the gluon.
In this case, it is correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So just make sure everyone's on the same page. That here, if I have E plus E minus going to jets, I can define an angle here, and this is the angle essentially between the E plus E minus angle and the Q. I could have defined this angle theta as the angle between E plus E minus and the Q. But I'm not going to. I'm going to find this as the angle from E plus E minus to somehow this combo quark gluon system. Someone who's doing an NLO calculation does it the way that you just said. They integrate over wherever the gluons go.
Yeah.
We're going to do something that's somehow more, or it's more agnostic. We'll say, well, this divergence is not just because of the gluon, it's some interaction between the gluon and the quark system. And so we're going to talk about, so the question is, what when you integrate over this region U, what do you call the resulting two-body phase space? So here's integral here. And in some sense, what I want this to be, let me erase and rewrite it in a more provocative way. I want to have it be this. I want to say I have d phi 2 integral of d phi 3 over d phi 2 constrained to the region of Eij less than U. That is, at the end of the day, I want my regulated two-body phase space to look like two-body phase space, but including integrals over three-body phase space, and the definition of this is ambiguous. What do I want to choose for that definition? This definition essentially defines a measurement function, in some sense, at least in this region of PJ less than U.
So the final answer will be independent of the choice of mu, correct?
Well, okay, good. So we want the final answer to be independent. So in this case, over here, because of the phase space working out, if I work to fixed order in alpha S, If I work to fixed order on alpha s, then this is no different than what you would have done at ordinary NLO. If I were to work to arbitrary order in alpha s, then because of this fact, and because these things are kind of defined, or because the NLO calculations will be put in here in such a way with kind of healthy measurement functions, if I work to fixed order in alpha s, then defining phase space in this way is just a reorganization, but it gives you exactly the same answer. But the issue is that, well, maybe I can't work to fixed order in alpha s. Maybe it's simply impossible for me to work to fixed order in alpha s. I still want to have a sensible result. So, you know, why not work to tree level? Whatever that means. Let's say I don't have the virtual diagram, but I still want to have a prediction. So if I only have this diagram and this diagram, and I simply do not have the virtual diagram, I still want to make sense of this. Why would I care about this? Well, why I care about this is that loop diagrams are hard to calculate. Tree-level diagrams are easy to calculate. And you can imagine a situation where I know a bunch of tree-level diagrams but simply do not know the virtual diagram. In that case, I still want to get a sensible answer. If I'm thinking about things in terms of NLO, if I'm really thinking about things in terms of measurement functions, when I think about things in terms of measurement functions, if I only have this diagram and this diagram, I simply cannot use this diagram. There's no way of using this diagram in a sensible way with measurement functions. The reason being that the measurement function has infrared divergences that are only understood if I have the virtual piece. So I still want to get a sensible result if I only have these two diagrams in play.
What does sensible mean?
What does sensible mean? Sensible means...
Does it mean right? I mean, you...
Good. So what sensible means is that it is exactly correct to the order at which, so that it's exactly correct in this case to order alpha s to the zero. That is, introducing this diagram does not change any observable at order alpha s to the zero. I maintain all the information about this diagram, and that there are no large logarithms. That is, minimize sensitivity to this scale mu, and I'll explain what that means.
So I'm confused.
Yeah.
So suppose you mirror something. How do you know that? How do you extrapolate the tree level and the loop level? In some sense, how do you know that? What is the exact order alpha is zero?
Sorry, you're asking
experiments. So you are trying to match.
Right. So what I would say is because I have this parton to hadron matching, all I need to do is I need to enter into this parton to hadron system, whatever it is, a model of QCD that converts my partons into hadrons, and once I enter into it, then that will all get taken care of. So the experimentalist doesn't know about infrared, or the experiment needs to know about infrared safety, but they don't have to know what I did, that I'm entering into the standard framework of how to get partons to hadrons. And I'm going to give them an answer that the perturbative calculation I'm going to give them, all I do is I guarantee them, you don't have to know what my answer is, but you know that it is correct to this order, so therefore you expect corrections at order alpha s to the 1. But I'm guaranteeing them in addition that I'm using some information from this diagram and that I'm going to minimize sensitivity to this scale mu. But they don't need to know what I'm doing down here. I'm just telling them, here's what my answer is going to satisfy for them. I'll explain more about what I mean by
so
that.
So I think this is something like an RG improved tree level.
This is not something like, this is exactly like an RG improved tree level calculation. This is exactly an RG improved tree level calculation.
So the only thing that's confusing in your statement, maybe I'll just wait.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll just wait. I find
yeah.
your statement confusing that it's exactly the same at alpha s to the 0 since that diagram is alpha s to the 1.
Right. So this diagram is alpha s to the
1. It's a model for alpha s to the 1 that...
It's a model for the alpha s to the 1 corrections.
It satisfies Hippocrates' oath, you first do no harm.
First do no harm, yes.
So
first do no harm.
Yeah.
That formally, if you were to expand it out, if you formally, whatever procedure I do, when you formally expand it out, you'll see the alpha s to the 0 term is exactly what you're supposed to calculate.
How could it not be?
How could it not be?
Something that has alphas in it. So,
how could it not be? I'll show you some examples where it will not be, and what is non-trivial that we can do. See, it's not just. It's also that it has to be that the total cross section also does not have corrections at that order. And when you start integrating things, some of the you can get alphas kind of moving out. And you can get, if you have things sufficiently divergent enough, you can get kind of formal expressions that are just completely wrong. I'll show you some examples. So let's say we did this. Let's say we calculated something in terms of this with our regulated phase space. So these two diagrams would be defined, or we're now going to define things. We only have these two diagrams. This guy is going to live on my regulated two-body phase space. This guy is going to live on my regulated three-body phase space. And if you were to do this, because these regulated spaces are functions of mu, you would find that because this thing is infrared divergent, that you would find that if you just did this by itself, you would find that any differential cross-section that you have would have a correction at order alpha s log squared mu. That is, the leading sensitivity to the scale mu, as I change mu, for example, the total cross-section by adding these things together, would give me a log squared mu sensitivity. And at first, you'd say, oh, this is unphysical sensitivity to mu. Well, it's not unphysical sensitivity to mu. It's physical sensitivity to unphysical scale mu. And it's physical sensitivity because these logs are real in perturbation theory. That is, if you did a measurement function, a real NLO measurement function, of some observable in terms of a jet cone size of some size r, so you have e plus e minus going to some jet, and you say, I'm going to define this jet by doing a cone algorithm with size r, the cross-section, the exclusive two-jet cross-section, so d sigma, or sigma, two-jet exclusive cross-section, that is, I have two jets and nothing else coming out. This thing really would have a piece in it that goes like alpha s log squared r. We like this sensitivity to r. This is a real sensitivity. This is telling you about how the two-jet cross-section changes with your why you do things. This is something that we call an event shape. This is something that we measure. It tells you something about alpha s in particular. The problem is, in this case, we're doing a physical measurement within a scale r. This thing has meaning. Here, I chose the scale mu, and the scale mu is my whim. And it has nothing to do, necessarily, with what the experimentalist is going to do in their measurement. Therefore, I want to get rid of this physical sensitivity. These logs are real, but the scale mu is unphysical. And so, well, in fact, if you actually do this two-jet exclusive calculation, you'll find that if you keep going higher and higher in perturbation theory, you'll find that this thing goes like alpha s to the n, log squared to the n, sum over a bunch of n. And this starts to say, oh, geez, I have some logs to resum. This starts sounding, again, like effective field theories. So somehow we want to interpret this scale mu somehow as being a scale interpreted by effective field theories. So the picture that you should have is exactly the effective field theory picture. That is, we start at some scale center mass energy. We're going to run down to some scale mu and run down to QCD. So here we're going to run down with our best perturbative theory at the scale mu. I match onto this model of QCD. And this model of QCD not only continues the running from mu down to lambda QCD, but it also includes this hadronization, this parton to hadron matching. I need to know nothing about this model of QCD except for that it behaves sensibly with respect to the scale mu, but I don't really have to care about how the hadronization works. And clearly, the answer that I want to have is I want to have the following. I want to have an answer that the differential cross-section for hadrons should be given by something. It should be given by some d sigma hat at the parton level, evaluated at the scale mu, folded together with some function that does the parton to hadron mapping at that scale mu. These partons are going to carry multiplicity. I could have two, three, or four partons, and, of course, sensitive to the flavors. Of course, these flavors, the hadrons don't know what the initial quark flavor is in, so I need to sum over all multiplicities of partons and multiplicities of quarks. I want my answer for the hadronic cross-sections to be, look exactly like a Wilson coefficient times some sort of operator. This operator here is something that this model of QCD is supposed to define. So me as a theorist, all I need to do is I need to calculate this object, and the conditions that we want this object to satisfy are that this partonic object should equal the this partonic object is a function of mu should equal to the partonic object as I would calculate in perturbation theory plus corrections to a higher order than I've calculated. So let's say I've calculated things to next to the I leading order. So I need to make sure that whatever answer for my Wilson coefficient is, it's going to be the partonic answer plus higher order corrections, and I want the change of the total answer to be zero. As I change this scale mu, this unphysical scale mu, I want it to be zero up to the order at which I've done resummation, the degree to which I've resummed the log. So again, this is supposed to be an answer that is accurate to n to the I LO, n to the j LL. What this means is I've used the perturbative calculations as much as I can, but it's also insensitive to this unphysical scale mu. And the degree to which I've accomplished this is, again, the same kind of degree to which you've done running and matching in perturbation theory. This is matching, and this is running. The only difference between ordinary effective field theory and this picture is that in ordinary effective field theories, in effective field theories, we do running and matching based on amplitudes. And here, in the context of Geneva, in terms of generating Monte Carlo estimates, we're doing the matching, running and matching at the observable level, so at amplitude squares. Clearly, if you did the running and matching at the amplitude level, you would also succeed at doing it at the amplitude squared level, but this is a lesser condition that all require is not that the amplitudes are matched, but simply that the results that you get, the measurements that you would make, are matched at that order.
Isn't there one other difference? You've integrated out degrees of freedom below mu.
I've integrated out degrees of freedom below mu, assuming that the model that I'm matching onto has all those infrared degrees of freedom. I'm assuming that the IR degrees of freedom here are the same as the IR degrees of freedom here, so that this theory, the only information I need from this theory is the Wilson coefficients. that these share the same infrared structure. The theory up here and the theory down here share the same infrared structure.
But somehow it has to know not to integrate over those degrees of freedom again.
This one does not integrate over those degrees of freedom again. This thing is a Monte Carlo program that gives you fully differential information. This one does not integrate over those degrees of freedom. This is equivalent to QCD matching on diskette. The information from QCD that you get are the Wilson coefficients, but SCET still has all the infrared divergences of QCD in it, so the matching is only on the level of the Wilson. You only need to include the Wilson coefficients, and while you may integrate over things, blah, 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 in order to define what this thing is, if you really formally did the matching correctly at the amplitude level, you would lose no information about the infrared structure of QCD when you match it on diskette. The only difference here is that I'm not doing it at the amplitude level, I'm only doing it at the observable level. And so then there's this question, well, can you really do this integration properly? Can you really get the right answers? But I'm just going to demand it. I'm going to define things by the property that I do it this way. You could ask, is there a formal procedure to do it this way? And that, I don't know what it is. I'm just going to demand that my final answer satisfies that condition. What this means is that all of the physics is contained in this object here. That if I trust someone else to do this parton to hadron matching, then all the information is contained in this object here. In fact, what Geneva is Geneva is a program. Well, not in its current form, but will be a program that takes any d sigma hat mu and interfaces with this parton to hadron matching function. You give me this, and I give you out of S. You give me this, and I continue the running from u down to lambda QCD. So everything's... everything's in d sigma hat mu. So now the question is, okay, what can we do with d sigma hat mu? So let's talk about some calculations that we can imagine having done. Alpha s to the 0, alpha...
So before you were talking about tree level, then
yeah.
You just generalized this to include if somebody's done calculations to some nextly order or something like
yeah.
that. But the simplest version of this is still all tree graphs.
Just all tree graphs.
Where you could imagine that the whole thing could be automated, right? Because then you could automate
That's right.
The Wilson coefficient
yeah.
thing as well.
Yeah. So alpha s to 0, alpha s to the 1, alpha s to 2. Let's just do this tree-level case. And since I'm running short on time, let me tell you what other people have done and what we can do.
We've got all day. There's no classes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much you want to... Well,
all day.
All day.
People are free to leave at any point. There's no.
So because people are free to leave, let me tell you what other people have done. And then I will continue and tell you more about what we can do. So let's say we imagine we just have tree level diagrams here. If I just use these tree level diagrams as is and simply slice up phase space with mu, making sure that these things are widely separated, then as I said, we have this large logarithmic sensitivity to that unphysical scale at which we separate things. That scale mu, though, is simply RG running, and it is known that Sudikoff form factors do resum leading logs. So if I can figure out a way of taking these tree-level diagrams and supplementing them with Sudikoff form factors, then I will have succeeded in making a generator that has leading order information, in the sense of having a bunch of tree-level things, with leading log resummation. And for those of you who don't know what a Sudikoff form factor, I'll explain more about what it is, but again, I just want to tell you what other people are doing, and I'll tell you how we do it and exactly what this picture is. This program of taking these tree-level graphs and adding Sudikoff form factors, which resum the leading log. This goes under various names that you might have heard of, CKKW matching procedure, the MLM matching procedure. There's some, Steve Morena and Peter Richardson have some procedure. Various people have procedures for doing this. And essentially what they're doing is they're saying, take these diagrams, resum the leading logs. But this only uses leading order information. What if I had a virtual diagram? And let's say I don't have this one. Well, here, there are still logarithms. While the final answer here, we have infrared divergences canceled between this. If I look at a differential rate, there's still large logarithms to the scale at which I say I want to integrate over this and dump it in here versus I want to keep it fully differential. So there's still logarithms here that depend on mu, and so I still want to resum logarithms. Just because I've worked to a fixed order in alpha s, I still want to resum logarithms because this regulated three-body phase space still depends on the scale mu, and the amount, while the total rate only cares about me canceling the IR divergences, differential rates still care about how much of this information I call three-body and how much I call two, essentially a division between things being three-jet and two-jet. So I still want to resum logs. And so if I take next to leading order information and I resum leading logs, then this is known as MC of NLO. There's also a program, Powhead, that does a similar thing. So it is known how to take tree-level diagrams along the diagonal and how to take a block like this. And what we're trying, what we did in our first papers in January is we show that you can do both of these things at the same time, that it is possible to have a procedure, Geneva version 1, it's possible to have a definition of this d sigma at mu that simultaneously has leading order information, that is a bunch of tree-level diagrams, plus next to leading order information in the form of this one diagram here. And you can formally find an object here such that two jet rates are correct to order alpha s to the 1. Three jet rates are correct to order alpha s to the 1. Four jet and higher are correct to alpha to the, well, the number of jets minus 2. So before, if I just did tree-level information, this thing would only be valid to order alpha s to the 0, but because I have this new diagram, I want to say that two-jet information should get an extra boost and be correct. And just in terms of a plot that I can draw for you, in terms of something that measures kind of the two-jettiness versus three-jettiness of an event, what we were able to show is that I can find an answer that here asymptotes to the known leading order, leading log result, that is, it's getting this three-jet information, and actually, I should really say two-jet to four-jet. It's getting the four-jet information that I've calculated here. Then in the two-jet region, I benefit from the next to leading order information that our program can interpolate between these two things. That this next leading order information shouldn't get the four-jet right, and this leading order information doesn't get the two-jet right, but that you can find an interpolation that is formally correct developing all this information. So this is what we've done, and what we're working on currently is figuring out a way of putting this diagram in. And this is now this question that you asked before. How do I know that, isn't it just trivial? When I put this thing together, isn't it just trivial that everything should work? But here we see that exactly how you interpret this, if you want this whole thing to be correct to order alpha s to the 1, but now you're putting in a diagram here that has somehow the same, or sorry, you want this whole thing to be correct to order alpha s to the 1. That's fine, you just ignore these diagrams here. But if you want this whole thing to be correct to alpha s to the 2, there's this extra piece up here that's giving you an alpha s to the 1 modification to this object here. That is, this is a calculation that makes full sense, but it has to compete with another calculation that you've already done that's already started at that order. So that's a case where it's not just trivial. Blocking this way is trivial, blocking this way is not. Okay, so the main lesson that I wanted to tell you is that there's a way of thinking about building a Monte Carlo generator effective field theory-like point of view, where you take something that has is the analog of a Wilson coefficient, you interface it with something that's a parton to hadron thing. So this is something that's defined just on partons, parton to hadron matching. This gives you a fully differential cross-section on hadrons. This is something that you can now hand to an experimentalist, a program that takes this as input, interfaces with this, gives you this as output for any choice of this. But now the choice of this is all theory. So theorists can come along that they can give me an object that's accurate to a certain order in perturbation theory and resums logs relative to the scale mu, then I can generate Monte Carlo for that right away. So this is an algorithmic statement. We have some magic algorithm that does this. So let me stop there, but say now I'm going to tell you what these things are, how to calculate. Let me stop there if anyone wants to leave. Okay. So let's do this statement about Surdakov factoring, summing, resumming leading logs. So let's say we only have this 2 to 2 diagram, e plus e minus going to jets. What we want to do with this diagram is we want to say, well, this 2 to 2 diagram is going to be my representation of all the partonic information, and I should be able to generate still hadrons from it. So if I just have this 2 to 2 diagram, then this picture of ECM and lambda QCD. If I only have the 2 to 2 diagram, then this is like having mu right at the center of mass energy, and instantly I match this onto some phenomenological model. I instantly match it onto something that's going to fill out phase space starting from mu going to lambda QCD. This phenomenological model has to cover all of phase space. That means that this 2 to 2 diagram, while it's defined only on this modified two-body phase space, it has to give me support on two-body phase space, three-body phase space, four-body phase space, five-body phase space, all this, and all of these partonic results. Have to then interface with the hadronization scheme. So normally, when we think about running and matching, we think about running and matching specific operators. Here, I'm talking about running and matching through everything. But this thing alone is supposed to generate everything. Well, one way we could generate this is by using Altarelli-Parisi splitting functions. What Altarelli-Parisi splitting functions do, they tell me that if I have some diagram involving two states here, and these two states are close to each other, that I can, sorry, let me draw this better. So I have some diagrams, some 2 to n diagram, and these two states are close to each other, then what the Altarelli-Parisi splitting functions tell me is that a good approximation to this amplitude is taking an amplitude with n minus 1 final states and taking one of those guys and branching it to two other guys. That is, I can take a 2 to n matrix element and I can write this, well, really this form, 2 to n amplitude squared, and I can write this as a 2 to the n minus 1 times a splitting function that takes that one object and splits it in. So this is formally correct in the limit that these two objects are soft and collinear. So if I only have this diagram here and I want to cover all of phase space, then I could say, well, geez, all I have is a 2 to 2, but if I keep using this function Q over and over and over again, I can approximate any 2 to the n amplitude by various splitting. So I really start with a 2 to the n, 2 to the 2 amplitude here, a 1 to 2 splitting, a 1 to 2 splitting. But I want to now do this in a way that preserves that the total cross-section is still going to be this object accurate to the order I've calculated anyway, alpha s to the 0. That is, I don't want these splittings to deform things. Yeah.
Sure, I'm following. You were describing now the part of this thing which is below the scale mu.
I'm talking about the part of this thing that is below the scale mu.
Yeah, but above lambda QCD.
But above lambda QCD. So a particular way of trying to fill out this phase space that will give me a covering of all phase space is to say I match only onto a single operator, that is onto a single 2 to 2 process, and the way that I generate additional processes is I use the Alter-Ehlers Presy splitting functions. These splitting functions formally only tell me that this equals this when these things are soft and collinear, but I'm going to use this information all over all of phase space as an approximation for how to fill out that phase space, some phenomenological model that uses information from QCD. Yeah, but that is correct. So this is the scale mu. This is all the information I give you, but now it will fill out. Now, if I only do this, then there's something really cool that happens. If I only have this 2 to 2 process, if I only have this 2 to 2 process, then the 1 to 2 splittings look like kind of radioactive decay in the sense that we have some Markovian process where I take a configuration and I split it, take a configuration and split it, take a configuration and split it. And it's known that if the splitting probability is some Q of t, then the kind of total rate to split, the kind of rate to split at a time t naught is given by the splitting at the scale t naught plus this exponential that tells me that I didn't split from the starting time to the ending time. So this is a differential rate to split is, well, I didn't split beforehand, and now I split at this time here. And this process, if I only have 2 to 2, does have that form. That is, in order to get a four-body configuration, I had to start with this thing, split at some scale, kind of not split, and then finally split at the scale that I get my four-body configuration. And therefore, the total rate to split is this formula. This is, again, familiar from radioactive decay. Now, just because I say I have a radioactive decay-like process that tells me how to go from a 2 to 2 to 2 to n, doesn't mean that this thing has any physical meaning. Is this thing physical? It looks kind of nice. This is an exponential of something. This looks like it could be resumming something. And though I don't know exactly how to prove it fast, this thing does indeed resum leading logarithms from scales t start to t naught. And this is the thing that's the Surdykov factor.
So you have to give some sort of off-shell prescription here, right?
I have to give you some off-shell prescription for how exactly, because this thing is only defined in the strict collinear limit, really. This thing is only defined in the strict collinear limit where this thing is exactly on shell. If I want this to cover all phase space where these things are at wide angle, I have to give you some prescription for how this is going to happen. That prescription turns out to be, so you could ask, why is this physical? How do I know that if I split exactly collinearly, this is going to mean anything, given the fact that the splittings can be at wide angle? The non-trivial statement is that this is physical, and that issue of off-shellness is a subleading effect, and that's why the Surdykov form factor has meaning. This is also a reason why calculating this form factor to higher orders is hard. When you go beyond the leading log approximation, it's no longer true that it will necessarily take the simple form because of that issue of off-shellness. So now, I have one I can now imagine running from this scale mu, or I can imagine I have this theory, I match the scale mu, I match onto the showering picture where things are being split 2 to 2, and amazingly, this 1 to 2 splitting process gives me resummation of fleeting logs. I can imagine taking that answer and now saying, well, let me define a new theory at some scale mu prime such that this piece of it is accomplished my d sigma hat of mu prime. What do I mean by this? I'm getting this picture of 2-jet, 3-jet, 4-jet, alpha s to the 0, alpha s to the 1, alpha s to the 2. I say that I have only this diagram, but let me incorporate the information from this splitting as if it were part of the UV theory. So I only have this information, but this theory, as I run from mu to mu prime, I'm generating operators that give me 2 to 3 splitting, but they're not giving me 2 to 3 in this form. They're giving me 2 to 3 in terms of splitting functions, and this thing we call a Surikov factor, usually labeled by delta, just this exponential, with leading log resummation in there. So I generate this picture where if I were with delta functions all over the place, if I were to say this model in here, if I were to incorporate this into a theory, then it would look like this. It would give me an answer for 2 to 2, an answer for 2 to 3, an answer for 2 to 4, that, while not formally accurate to alpha s to the 1, plays the role of giving me an alpha s to the 1 prediction, but it has a nice feature of resumming the logs. So that's one picture for ECM bounded mu naught. I start with the 2 to 2 and I run it down. But there's another picture, which is the one we had before, which is that I have alpha s 2 1, 2-jet, 3-jet, 4-jet, where I had tree-level matrix elements, real tree-level matrix elements. This thing has, it's correct to the various leading orders, this thing has the various leading logs being resummed. And the question is, this picture, again, these are both theories, level theories down to scale mu, then run down with some phenomenological model. Here, I match onto a phenomenological model at some scale right at ECM. I run down with this phenomenological model, which has a nice thing of resumming leading logs. And then I continue going down with the phenomenological model. This thing has my leading order information. This has my leading log. Clearly, you want to put these things together in some way, to simultaneously, because this phenomenological model happens to resum leading logs, it didn't have to, but this is the amazing thing about Surikov factors and this this radioactive way of splitting things. Because we know it doesn't, then we simply ask, well, how can we put this tree-level information in there to merge the leading order information with the leading log information? And the answer is, well, shouldn't I just be able to transplant these deltas and just put them there? What do I know about these splitting functions? What is this answer here? This M3, what is it? This thing is a two-body matrix element times a splitting function from 1 to 2. So this is the M3 in what's called the Parton-Shower approximation versus this is an M3 in the matrix element approximation, which is simply whatever it is. What I know about this is I know that, it's this times a splitting function times a Surikov factor, that's resumming the logs. What I know about this is I know that M2 squared times the splitting from 1 to 2 asymptotes to M3, this matrix element piece, in the soft collinear limit. fact, that's how we derive the splitting functions, is saying that this thing in the soft collinear limit, when two of these things get close together, can be written as the two-body times the splitting. When I implement this in an algorithm, I get the two-body times the splitting plus the Surikov factor, but because this asymptotes to this, you would say, geez, shouldn't the answer simply be swap out this object here for the exact tree-level matrix element? Shouldn't that give me the right answer? Let's see if it gives you the right answer.
Was it soft collinear or just collinear?
Sorry, just collinear. Just collinear. Just collinear. So d sigma hat of mu, my best guess is that shouldn't d sigma hat of mu be an ordinary tree-level matrix element times a Surikov factor? That is, I take this piece, I know this asymptotes to the tree level, but it has this leading log resummation. Does this thing satisfy the conditions, and this the Surikov factor depends on the scale mu, does this satisfy the conditions that it will maintain all the information, it will maintain I'm still working at the same order, but it will also resum the logs. The Surikov factor, again, is the exponential of an integral of the splitting function, which is 1 plus something of order alpha s. So indeed, if I expand this thing out, I get tree level plus something that's higher order in alpha s to the whatever the higher order is. And so this is something that is indeed correctly matched at the order at which I've done a calculation. But the Surikov factor is chosen in such a way, so d by d mu of log of the Surikov factor is chosen to be exactly opposite to d by d mu of log of this parton to hadron thing I was doing. So this parton to hadron thing, this is what we call Dieglap evolution. The Dieglap evolution of the infrared parton to hadron matching thing is precisely inverted by the Surikov factor. So this thing also satisfies the condition that it resums leading logs, because it was chosen precisely to do that. That's exactly how you figured out what this parton to shower matching criteria is supposed to be. So we figured out a really simple formula that's matched to leading order but run at leading log. And this is exactly what's been done by CKKW, MLM, et cetera, et cetera. They don't talk about it this way, but it, again, it's just running and matching a given order, leading order, and a given number of logs.
So there's no way to do this at the amplitude level, you said?
There is no way to do this at the...
Or can I just take square root delta and put that on each propagator?
You can do it at the amplitude level, but it's, I don't know, it's not meaningful at the amplitude level. The meaningful thing at the amplitude level is you do this with SKET, that would be doing it at the amplitude level. And they would give you a procedure for exactly how you're supposed to do it. In this, I only know how to do this at the amplitude squared level. But there is, in principle, a way of doing this at the amplitude level, but it would be more... Yeah, I don't know exactly what it would look like.
But I would just use the SKET propagator.
You would use the SKET propagator. And the SKET propagator and the SKET... Well, this thing would be now the Wilson coefficient as you ran the theory down from the scale, ECM down to the scale. Yeah. So if we believe that these deltas represent resummation of leading logs, now we can ask, okay, can we find a formal expression now
I'm a little bit lost because
yeah.
I mean I think I understand this basically,
yeah.
But this seems to be looks like it's deviating from the sort of more sort of systematic approach that you were talking about before. So I'm a little
the systematic approach that I was talking about before is in principle systematically I need to choose d sigma hat that satisfies certain criteria. The only procedure that I know of that does that systematically of getting things accurate to a given order in leading order and a given order in logs, the only way I know systematically how to do that is to do it in SKET. SKET hasn't done these calculations yet. They don't have the necessary calculations to do this for arbitrary diagrams, but I can cheat. At the leading log level, I can cheat and write down formal expressions that instead of doing it at the amplitude level, do it at the amplitude squared level. I'm cheating. I'm not doing it.
You have to set up this general program.
Yeah.
Sort of by by construction, like a la Coleman or something,
yeah.
down the answer and check that it's the answer.
Right. Which, and you could say, well, can you systematically expand that? Can you continue to do this to higher order? And the answer is no, I cannot do it. I don't know what the general answer is. But I know the answer in enough cases that an experimentalist would be excited by it. That is, I figured out, or actually these people have figured out, formal expressions that satisfy the criteria of the running and matching. They're not doing it in the context of an actual effective theory, but now you can say, oh, but now that you've written a computer program that will take Wilson coefficients and give you out hadrons, now you can say, now you can actually go to the SCET people and say, okay, calculate me these Wilson coefficients. Now that you've told them, there's a way now that those Wilson coefficients make sense. So you're right. At this point, I am using external information that this happens to be some leading logs, and it happens to be written in this probabilistic way. I'm using that information in order to supplement tree-level diagrams. But if I wanted to go to next to leading log, it no longer has this form, and I don't know what to do at this point. But I know what the criteria would be. If you gave me an object here that was matched at some order in alpha s and did next to leading log re-summation, I would know how to make Monte Carlo out of it, because the Monte Carlo program does not care what the numerical values of this are. It will just take it and go and run with it. Note that what I did not do is that I didn't say, take this parton shower. Sorry. What I said was, we match onto this parton shower at the center of mass scale, we ran it down to the scale mu, and we called this a theory calculation that then was interfaced down. We called this a theory calculation. All other approaches, these kinds of things, do not call this a separate theory calculation. And so therefore they can't be generalized. Here, I don't care what this theory calculation is. I need to check that it has the form that I want it to, but any theory calculation I get input here, I happen to just to take the theory calculation that came from interpreting the phenomenological model, but I'm not starting at the center of mass energy, running all the way down, and doing some fudging up here. That's not what I'm doing. I'm systematically going from here down to here. Yes, maybe I happen to use intuition from what would happen down here to figure out the answer up here, but this is now a black box, or rather, the theory box where I put my answer. In particular, the CKKW method and the MLM method are based on specific jet algorithms that figure out exactly what scales these emissions occur at. And our answer doesn't care about a jet algorithm. It's just simply tree-level times Surikoff factor. But the Surikoff factor is independent of any algorithmic procedure.
And so even at this level, you would say, I'm not familiar with these things, even at this level, you would say this is a simpler implementation of this.
It's not a simpler, it's much more complicated.
Okay.
It's more complicated because I'm forcing myself to do things twice. I have a Surikoff factor from here to here, from ECM down to mu, and a Surikoff factor from u down to lambda QCD. This is more complicated. I've split off one object, the Surikoff factor going all the way from ECM down to lambda QCD. This is a physical thing that at the end of the day you're going to calculate with your program. They do it in one shot, and then they fudge things back up here to get the tree-level matrix element. What I say is, no, I'm doing it in two pieces. I'm doing more complicated. First, resum the logs from here to here. Stop. Close the program, open up a new program, start from here, and run all the way down. It's more complicated algorithmically, but conceptually it's much simpler because now this is now a black box that can be swapped out and swapped in for something else. And in particular, changing the Surikoff factor. There are next to leading log contributions in there that I can imagine just tweaking by hand. In a picture where you go from here to here, tweaking it by hand means you have to change how your algorithm works. For me, tweaking it by hand is I just put a new thing in this black box. I say, oh, I want to, by hand, just pick a new function to put in that. Similarly, if I want to check higher-order corrections, I could take this tree-level thing and just add some arbitrary order alpha s piece to it. And just see how does my theory thing as I change put an arbitrary kind of order alpha s size corrections. This would be a way of checking what the systematics would be from the absence of higher order terms. But it's just a function here. It can be arbitrarily input. It's just making a guess about what the Wilson coefficient would have been.
So you're done?
What?
Yeah.
the mu in the delta. Before the mu was some restriction on the phase space integration.
Yes.
And now the mu in the Sudokov is partly comes from running, doesn't it?
Or right. So now you can say does the mu in the phase space have to be the same as the mu in the Sudokov factor? No, it doesn't. No need for it to be. It would be convenient if it were. It would be convenient if it were, because then you have to worry about making sure that you've always consistently defined your scales everywhere to be correct, and making sure that the person at the bottom knows what, because this procedure going down here is ordered, you have to make sure that things don't get put out of order by choosing different things. But this mu does not necessarily have to be the same mu that you would use for the phase space restriction. But you should be mindful of the fact that...
But I thought part of its job was to make sure we cancel this...
That's right.
...on the unphysical mu.
It would
so
be...
So there's two unphysical mus.
Yes, then you have... Then you have a,
they cancel?
So you put in another piece that you say... You would say that d sigma hat of mu phase space is equal to d sigma hat as a function... of mu of my calculation, because I didn't necessarily choose the same regulation scale as I did in my phase space, times some Sudokov factor that would match my calculation onto my phase space. So there would be a mismatch that you'd have to account for. So this is the fundamental object. This is the thing that our program needs to take. But if you did a calculation in this form and you were okay with logs of this kind, because these logs are going to be small, and I just need to do it in some way that cancels off the leading log dependence. As long as you're okay with the fact that me as an algorithmic person, I'm making a choice for you, then you can just give me this. I'll apply my own correction factor, and you'll get to the thing that the program needs as input. But you wouldn't, I mean, it would be much more convenient if this thing were just one. But it does not need to be the same. But you still need to do some fussing around if you wanted not to do it that way. So it would be complicated but not impossible.
But I mean, in the simplest version, they are the same.
In the simplest version, they are the same. In the current version,
think of them as.
I would think of them as the same if you don't want to go crazy. But it's actually a really. I'm not telling you all the algorithmic details, but here's an example of how this is extremely confusing, and where we actually do something equivalent of this. If I have a configuration that looks like the following, E plus E minus goes to J. What scale is this associated with? Is this the dot of this? Is that the scale mu? Or is this the scale mu? Well, you would say, oh, these ones look closer together. So I'd say this should be the scale mu that which I match onto the parton shower. But you can imagine a configuration where this is moved such that it's, you know, almost 50-50 between the two. What's the scale mu? Is it this scale or this scale? Which choice do you make? This is now an ambiguity as to what scale should appear in the logarithm. Formally, it's a subleading effect. But we make a choice. We essentially make a choice for what this is. We calculate this and put some factor in order to make sure that things match up. But configurations like this, where it's not clear what the logs mean, it's not clear what you're resumming. It's far away from the soft collinear limit. You have to make a choice, and it's ambiguous.
So just to beat it to death.
Yeah.
Say I'm doing E plus E minus to some C of T.
Yeah.
Then the deltas won't have any mu dependence.
And the deltas won't have any mu dependence.
I think, because alpha won't run.
Well, this mu dependence. This mu is a. Sorry. I'm also not running alpha s in this picture. This mu is not coming from that. It's coming from the mu dependence. The Sudokov factor is the integral of a splitting function. And while there is an alpha s in here, I don't necessarily need to run alpha s in order to get mu. Mu, this is a phase space. It's a no branching over a certain configuration of phase space. So I would still have mu dependence even in a CFT. Because there's a difference between asking, did a CFT, even if alpha s is fixed, did a CFT give us energy flow at large angle or small angle? And that's what this mu is resumming. It's resumming angles from large to small. So now you can ask, okay, can I go further? Can I do this? And you can. Let me just write down the answer, just to show you that there is some formal expression that has the logs resummed and is correct to higher order. It's only enlightening. It's not enlightening as an object by itself. You don't know what it... All I can show is that it satisfies the criteria. You could ask, what physical meaning does it have? What does it correspond to? An E of T? What exactly is the matching procedure? But if I have some d sigma hat n of mu and d sigma hat n plus 1 of mu, so here 2 is n and 3 is n, because this row is something that's on regulated two-body phase space, and this is something on regulated three-body phase space. So I need to define the functions that live on regulated 2 and regulated 3. Here's an answer that works. D sigma n tree plus D sigma n loop minus integral D sigma n plus 1 tree, D sigma n tree time, D sigma n tree times a splitting function, this whole thing times a Surdykov factor. And down here is D sigma n plus 1 tree plus the splitting function times d sigma n mu minus d sigma n tree. And this is, what am I writing here? Let me erase something so I can. We write out the Surdykov factor. E to the minus integral of essentially Q. If I formally expand this out, what do I have? Well, d sigma n tree, this is the order alpha s, the leading order piece, the next leading order piece is d sigma n loop. I would have this except for when I expand out the exponential, this minus Q multiplies the tree when I expand out the exponential, and exactly that, right, this plus next to next leading order information. This is extremely bizarre. This loop calculation is IR divergent. I have a tree level piece that's finite, IR divergent piece, plus higher order corrections. So the expansion, the formal expansion in alpha s is IR divergent. But here, the loop diagram is the tree-level diagram times the splitting function, or the integral over splitting function. The IR divergences are canceled here because the splitting functions have all the IR singularities of the virtual thing. So the IR divergences are canceled in this expression, yet the formal expansion is formally infinite, or epsilon-dependent if you're doing dim right. And the same thing here. This tree-level thing is just tree-level plus higher order NLO. So this is a formal expression. You can ask, where does this thing come from? How do I know that I'm supposed to take a tree plus a loop plus a tree times an integral of splitting function times a Surdykov factor? This Surdykov factor guarantees that leading logs are resummed. And then I put something down here such that the integral of this plus the integral of this is the formal next to leading order calculation. And again, this thing is just chosen such that this, when integrated against this, essentially vanishes. How do I know that this thing is right? Well, I don't know that it's right on an amplitude level, but in terms of an expression that satisfies the conditions that it expands out to what it should, and if you sum leading logs, it works. And this is what people call M state NLO. Now what we want to do, and this will be the last thing I do, is add this extra tree-level diagram. How do I add an extra tree-level piece in such a way that I maintain all the successes of this picture, of this block here, and get information from the diagonal block? And the answer will be very satisfying from an effective field theory point of view. Okay, so ECM down to mu, this is supposed to be my theory calculation, but I'm going to split my theory calculation in two. I'm going to put a mu prime scale here. And I say that d sigma hat at the scale mu is the sigma hat of the leading order, leading log calculation at the scale mu times, run back to the scale mu prime, mod out by what d sigma hat leading order, leading log did at the scale mu prime, and put in a better calculation that has next to leading order information, and evaluate that at the scale mu prime. So this is running down to mu, then backtracking to mu prime, and to get a correction factor. And the picture you can have is that you have an E plus E minus collision that it goes all the way down and is hadronized. At some scale mu, I take this thing and I put in something that has the tree level times the Sudikoff. But because I only have a loop diagram corresponding to that made sense for three-body phase space, I can backtrack to the scale mu prime, run this back up, undo what I did here, and put in now my loop calculation. And that's what this formula does. I start at the scale mu, my black box, by calculating something and applying essentially another matching coefficient at the scale mu prime to get the extra information. So another way of saying this is, from the scale ECM down to mu, let's say I had six-body phase space. The scale mu prime, I have three-body phase space. My three-body phase space has this whole interesting structure here, and I can recover that structure at scale mu prime by doing this. So this is something that's defined on six-body phase space. This is defined on three-body phase space. This is defined on three-body phase space. A complicated but nice example of a formula for what this d sigma hat could be, and something that combines information from two different known methods, including Monte Carlo.
And now you can imagine. Okay, I'll say one last thing.
You can imagine working with people like Lance Dixon, other Twister people. And what they say is they say, just like you have tools like MadGraph that can give you arbitrary tree diagrams, the Black Hat collaboration and other similar collaborations are saying, look, we can use analytic methods to give you arbitrary loop diagrams analytically. But just having these loop diagrams by themselves are not that useful. First, you have to think about the issue of IR divergence canceling between these. And you have to think about resumming leading logs between these various calculations. But in principle, there's going to be a very similar formula to this kind of formula of finding kind of running, matching, running, matching, running, matching, running, matching, that would allow you to, even in the absence of information that would make us formally accurate at a scale of S cubed, you can still use this effective theory RG picture to kind of cascade back to get the kind of information that you wanted to build. And so we're working on trying to make sure that this does work formally. And as you might imagine, if you only do leading, this is confusing because you're running and matching at kind of different orders. You're kind of doing one loop running, but kind of then loop matching. You're supposed to do one loop. If you want to do loop matching, then you should do two loop running. And leading logs are more like one loop running. And so we have to figure out exactly how to make sure everything is formally accurate.
Yeah, so an hour and a half later, thank you for your time.
So are people trying to do this all at this get? Is that...
Well, they started doing it, and then they stopped because they couldn't implement it.
No.
I mean, this is why... So I'm working with Christian Bauer and Frank Tagman, who are both SCET people, and they started going down this path and said, oh, we have all these calculations. We've calculated the anomalous dimensions of all sorts of operators. And then they said, well, what do we do with them? And they ran into this problem of infrared divergences, that they have
we have these Wilson coefficients that make perfect sense, but the operators themselves have infrared divergences. The sket operators themselves have infrared divergences.
So do you think it does or it doesn't make sense at the amplitude level? I mean, it sounds like, I'm not familiar with this, but it sounds like a strong claim that you could make sense out of this at the amplitude level, because always this IR divergence things, it's said that it only cancels in the rate and so on, that physically it's supposed to be something that's intrinsically amplitude squared, not
that's
amplitude.
Right.
But if,
that's
but
correct.
Maybe sket is really, really smart. Is that...
Well, so the answer is that
sounds like you're saying that actually might not nobody if it does that nobody knows that it can do that.
So, for example, groups of factorization that show that this works only work when you involve measurement functions.
Yeah.
And sket is trying to do things fully differentially, just like we're trying to do things fully differentially.
But
you
at
could
the
ask
amplitude level, or
at the, and, but sket's trying to do it fully differentially at the amplitude level.
Yeah.
And if you've ever heard the word of Glauber gluons. Apparently, there's this question that Glauber gluons are certain modes that sket does not include, but that vanish only after integration over all of phase space. So you integrate over all of phase space, these Glaubers disappear, and sket. There's this ongoing debate between George Sturman and the sket people about well, if you're not integrating over things, what are you going to do with these Glauber regions? And talking with Ian Stewart about this question, he said, well, it may be that the only way to match and run is at the amplitude squared level, that it may not be possible to actually do things at the amplitude level.
Okay.
In the context of sket without Glaubers, which is perfectly fine for understanding this particular configuration, it is in fact true that you can do it. But there are certain configurations that are not relevant for E plus E minus, but would be relevant for hadron colliders, where you'd have to worry about, can you really get fully differential information, or do you have to start playing funny games with amplitude squares and integrating over phase space and such. But whatever it is, we're, again, already starting with an assumption that is not correct. We're starting with the assumption that there is some factorized form that I can just make partons and then, okay, now take these partons, go to hadrons. I've already started with that assumption. And so if that's not true, this Monte Carlo program will also not be true, and it won't be true to the extent that that factorization doesn't hold. But it's as true as you can get with that assumption of factorization.
Thank you.